Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Wild Yoga Tribe podcast. I'm your host, Lily Allen Duenas. Together, we'll talk about the world of yoga and we'll talk to people from around the world. Before diving into the episode, I wanted to invite you to head on over to my Patreon account. I would love your support and I'm thrilled to have this beautiful community space where we can do yoga together, meditate together, and you'll get access to exclusive content. Get ready for some private Zoom Q&As, free printable art, meditation recordings, and more. Follow the link in the show notes to get started or head on over to any of my social media channels or my website, wildyogatribe.com, to hang out, get to know each other better, and find out more about all the support and resources available to you. Ready to dive in? Let's get started. Namaste and welcome back to the Wild Yoga Tribe podcast. Today, I'm so excited to be joined by Alia Lika. She's a yoga teacher from Malaysia, and she was certified in 2016 by the Malaysian Association of Yoga Instructors, and that was in Hatha Yoga. But she did another 200 yoga teacher training with the Vikasa Academy and another 50-hour yoga teacher training in Yin Yoga with a woman named Alicia Casillas. So I'm so excited to talk more with Alia about these teaching styles and about her focus in her classes and about her journey. So thank you so much, Alia, for being on the show today.
Thank you, Lily, for having me.
Wonderful. So let's start off the show just by hearing about your journey, like how yoga came into your life.
So in my 20s, I was a flight attendant and I didn't have a great lifestyle. I had a fun lifestyle, but not a great one because I don't eat well. I don't sleep well. Everything was very rushed and our timings were always upside down when it comes to sleep because we travel really early. We wake up too early or we arrive at a port late at night. That has taken a toll on my body. At some point in time when I got married and I got pregnant, like that's when reality hit me, as in I'm such an unhealthy person because everything hurts, my back, I can't sleep. Pregnancy didn't help either. So slowly in time after I've given birth to my daughter, the confinement lady. So in Asia, we have this confinement lady, which is a maternity nurse. So these women, they take care of you postpartum and also the baby. My confinement lady actually, well, she's from the village, but she was so enlightened. She asked me if I've ever heard of yoga. And I told her, yeah, I do, but I've never tried it. And she was the one who actually taught me some exercises, like yoga exercises and asanas to do when I wake up, before I go to sleep. So I was really shocked at the fact that even though she was from a village and she doesn't watch a lot of TV or read a lot of books, but she was very enlightened. So at some point in time, in taking care of my daughter, staying at home all day, being with like a small little person all day, all night, has really also taken a toll on my mental health because you just feel like your IQ level is going down to a single digit. My husband pushed me to go for like, you know, to have a gym membership, to go and socialize also. And also to be a little bit more healthy in the sense that you have some movement in your body instead of just sedentary lifestyle, just sitting down, just watching TV, taking care of the baby. Slowly I started going for yoga classes. The first yoga class was awful, awful, because I couldn't do practically all of it. I couldn't fall forwards. I couldn't stretch my arms back. I couldn't do anything. But when I came home and I told him, like, I'm never going back. And he's just one more day. Then one more day became a week, then a month, and then a year. Until to the point that I'm like, wow, this is great because it does make me feel better mentally and also physically, also emotionally, because I learned how to regulate my emotions. And all the breathing exercises really made a huge impact on me. So that is when that yoga teacher training started in 2016. From there, I just thought that I just want to learn more about it. But then slowly friends started saying, let's have a class together. Or let's just do it together. And then eventually it became like, hey, wait a minute, I'm pretty good at this. And my friends were always very supportive. And they always told me that you should start teaching people. But then I also have this one part of me is that I'm a perfectionist. So I'm so concerned about what if I'm doing it wrong? I always have this. I worry that I don't know enough to teach someone. But everyone tells me, Alia, it comes with experience. Just go for it. Just go for it. And don't think too much. So that's how it started in my life. So yoga really changed my perspective on everything, people, my environment, and also my connection with other people.
Oh, there's so much I want to comment on. Oh, that's amazing. Just my mind is spinning. That's so cool that you recognized, okay, I'm having a fun lifestyle as a flight attendant, not a healthy one. And then after giving birth, having that pregnancy nurse or the post-pregnancy nurse, postpartum nurse, being able to teach you some yoga asanas and to have that energy and awareness where, as you said, she probably wasn't like watching yoga classes on YouTube. Like this was something that she had gained probably from another authentic source or just that kind of person-to-person transmission of knowledge. Oh, that's so great. I loved too hearing how you said, I did my yoga teacher training, but I was really scared to start teaching because I think that's something we all can relate to, that 200-hour yoga teacher training doesn't immediately make you into a yoga teacher. You know, you don't just flip a switch and, oh, I'm a yoga teacher. I have the paper. There's so much more learning and practicing and trying and failing and shifting. It's not so linear. And so like, oh, checked a box, I can now do everything.
Yes. Also, a lot of times after 200 hours, you think you know everything. But then again, there's so many other smaller modifications that you're unaware of until someone else points it out to you. Like when you guys still go to classes, Lily, that I still go to classes. I don't just teach. I still go to yoga classes because I'm so curious about what does this teacher can teach me more. You know what I mean? They always have these little tricks and tips when they teach you, even for a downward dog. You think you know a lot about downward dog, but then they tell you, shift your shoulders to this side, that side, the little small modifications. And you're like, hey, wait a minute, this is beautiful. This is a perfect way to explain it. So while I'm going for classes, I'm also still learning. So a lot of people ask me, like, why do you still go to classes when you teach? And I'm like, it's not the same because I will always enjoy being a student. You don't have to think about your sequence. You don't have to think about your cues. At the same time, you're still learning how to refine your downward dog, for example.
Oh, that's such a great example to give to, because every yoga pose, I think, has so many nuances to it where you think, okay, I'm in the general shape, kind of got it. And as you said, are you thinking about where your elbows, the eyes of your elbows are pointing? Are you thinking about which toe to be pressing down on the most? The heel, the inner edge, the outer edge, the pinky toe, the big toe. When I was taking yoga classes in India, it just blew me away how specific and detailed every single yoga pose can be. And it makes me feel just so humble that there's always more to learn, every pose.
That's right.
So I love that you go to yoga classes too, because I also feel like I'm a student for life. I'm a yoga teacher for life, but there's so much to remember and to focus on when you're teaching. And it should be the energy's focused outward when you're teaching. You're focusing on your students and their experience. But when you're practicing, your energy is focusing inward. You're able to have that wonderful breath alignment and the mind melting back into the body. And there's so many benefits to gain. Do you also feel that internal experience more amplified and more intense when you're practicing? Or do you do self-practice as well?
I do self-practice, but self-practice is more for meditation because I feel like I need to really work on my meditation. You know what I mean? It's really hard. Everyone's like, oh, it's easy. You just sit down and breathe. I'm like, no, but also like you need to be present. Being present is so difficult sometimes, especially when you're extremely busy and you have a million and one to-do lists for the whole week, or you're just catching up on work, or you have to plan for classes. Especially for me, I like to plan for my classes. So meditation, like self-practice meditation, was, for me, it's still very challenging. And I always feel like maybe I need 3 months. 3 months with another meditation guru. Just sit me down and tell me what to do. But then again, that defeats the purpose altogether, right? You got to learn to sit down with yourself and breathe and just really focus your energy at the present moment. I'm still learning that. Really hard.
I think we'll all be learning it every day. It's a practice that I love. We get to try again and try again. It's beautiful that one day we might feel like, oh, that didn't go the way I hoped or I expected, but that's also part of the practice, is to let go of expectation, to let go of that ego desire for it to be calm, still, peaceful, perfect, and to let go of that, the craving for comfort, for, oh, my practice should be so, my meditation should be so comfortable and perfect. Okay, let it all go. That is meditation too.
Accept it as it is. It's okay. You always get to try again.
Yes. So, Alia, do you feel like there's something that people are getting wrong about yoga? Do you think there's anything that has been coming up for you that you've been noticing that you're like, okay, when people come to my class, they expect something different? Or is there anything that you think you'd want to share on that topic?
I feel like everyone's perception about yoga is that it's just asanas. So when I teach, I always like to start with pranayama, just to calm the mind down and just to stay focused. And a lot of times I can tell that everyone thinks this part of that class is extremely boring or it's just a waste of time. And it's quite sad because there's so much more to yoga than just asanas. Everyone just wants to come to class and sweat. You know, no one wants to take one breath, one movement at a time. So the more they sweat, they think they're doing it right. But then again, to each their own. I completely understand some people just want to work out. But that is one part that kind of is quite sad for me, because nobody wants. Some people even don't stay for Shavasana. So that is concerning to me.
Oh, yeah, that breaks my heart. I'm like, guys, this is where the good stuff is.
Yeah, you deserve to just lie down and just be with your breath, because you've exerted yourself. And it's only right to balance everything out, going hard and then resting hard.
Yeah, it's the yin and the yang. That dual nature.
Yeah, it's hard for especially gym goers, because they do HIIT, they do stationary bikes. So they've always been in these fast-moving activities that they don't know how to tune down and calm down. So it's hard to teach people this part unless they're extremely tired after a really hardcore power yoga session. And then they would, oh, I'll stay for Shavasana. You know what I mean?
Oh, but definitely.
Yes, but most times it's just really, I can say it's a little annoying when you leave before Shavasana, but it's okay. Like, I get it. Like, maybe people are always running to do other things. Like, yoga is like, okay, I got only 1 hour. I'm just going to shower and then go back to work. I get it. Also, I noticed that with social media and Instagram, TikTok and everything, like, everyone thinks yoga is a handstand. Everyone wants to kneel the pose. And I always preach, it's not about how the pose looks. It's about how it makes you feel. Just concentrate on the part that's being stretched. Where do you feel it? How do you feel it? What is your breath like? But most times, like, students come up to me and like, hey, Ala, can you teach me a pose so I can post it on Instagram? And I feel like, oh my God, I have to do this. But yeah, it's sad.
It definitely is. And I love that you brought up that yoga isn't a handstand. That's something I've noticed also on social media, that people are posting, oh, pay me $200, join my 10-day online course, and you'll be able to do a handstand. It's that's not how it works. And it's sad that we're trying to peddle that snake oil, saying, oh, this can work for you. I don't think so. But also, it's sad that people are monetizing that and taking advantage of that.
Also, I also don't like the fact that whenever I tell my friends, especially my friends that I know need yoga. Do you know what I mean, Lily? You see someone, you're like, you need yoga. So, and I'm just like, you guys should just, like, it's on me, like, just come over and let's do 1 hour of just yin yoga, you know, and let's just chill, because they're like people who work in the offices, they're in corporate life. It's super stressful. They work from 9 to 9 or sometimes 10 overtime. And I'm like, you got to rest. And they're like, oh, but I'm not flexible. And it's hard to explain, like, you don't have to be flexible. You just have to sit with yourself and just explore your limitations, right? And be comfortable with your limitations. So this is one of the reasons, something that a lot of people get wrong, that you need to be flexible. You just have to have your breath. You have a physical body. You have a mat. That's all you need. You don't even need other extra equipments.
Oh, definitely. And I also firmly believe that the people who need yoga the most are the people who don't want to do yoga.
Yes.
Or the people who skip Shavasana are the people who need Shavasana the most.
It's true. Sometimes I just, let's just try. And they're like, oh, I can't. Because, you know, you can tell their fingers are fidgeting, their head's moving. They just cannot stop moving. And you're trying to tell them it's okay to be in stillness, quiet, just be quiet for a while. They just can't. They just got to grab their phone and look at their messages. And I'm just like, oh my God, your brain is so tired. But you don't realize that because you're on that fight or flight mode all the time, all your life. So you don't know what it feels like not to be in that.
Oh, yeah. The nervous system is just in overdrive. The adrenal glands are just pumping like an IV drip our system. It's very sad.
And they keep telling me that they're so tired. And I'm, maybe you should do yoga.
Yeah. Maybe you should rest. And I know what we resist will resist us twice as hard. So if we're fighting so hard not to rest, everything's going to be fighting back saying, you should rest. That's why you're so tired. That's why you're so stressed. That's why you're so fidgety. And it takes usually a huge breakdown or a huge...
Yes, like depressive episode, or you just...
Yeah.
You black out. Some people even like just black out. They faint. They just collapse. And then you wonder, what happened? Everyone's like, what happened? And I'm like, have you seen how stressed she has been all these years? Do you know what I mean? That's why there's a lot of young people who are getting heart attacks in their 30s. It's obvious there is a problem. But the lifestyle, especially in Asia, it's always about go. You know, you're not being productive if you're resting. You're not making enough money if you're resting. You're not doing something for your family if you're resting. You're lazy. So resting is a bad thing, especially in Asia. If you're not hardworking, you're a loser.
Is there any free time, or is there any like time for self-care? Is that becoming more and more prioritized? I know here in the West, there's a huge self-care movement. Is that at all creeping into Malaysia?
I think in Malaysia, it's starting to take shape. But at the same time, there is this constant need to be on social media, to show off your things, your cars, your houses, your perfect holidays. So there's always that need to, I got to work harder. I got to earn more money. So slowly, I've seen a lot of times, I've been seeing a great shift that everyone's trying to take more time to rest and also self-care. That's why they come to gym. But then when they come to gym, it becomes a different story altogether. It's, I got to be leaner. I got to be skinnier. It's just never ending.
Students are trying to get skinnier? A lot of your yoga students?
Oh my God, I won't take clients that want to lose weight. That is just my thing. If someone comes up to me, I want to do yoga because I have a event coming up in 3 months and I want to lose 10 kgs. I'm like, no, I'm not the one for you.
Good for you. I'm very impressed. Good for you. Way to put the foot down.
I can't. Because you defeat the whole purpose altogether. You just want to lose weight. But then do you even care about your insides? Of course, you can lose weight. But what about your insides? I don't think it can be healthy to lose 10 kgs in 3 months. It's just unhealthy. Your organs are going to be in shock. Your body is just... It's going to be crazy. So I would never put a poster, have yoga with Alia to lose weight. You'll never see that happening.
Good. I'll hold you to that. I'll keep my eyes out.
But a lot of times, and a lot of yoga classes are selling classes like abs, arms, and stomach. And I'm just like, what's going on here? So they're only doing like exercises or asanas that are mainly to get six packs, to build your butt, to lean up your arms. But then I'm thinking, what about the hips? Are you guys going to release your hips? So there's this big market right now to look a certain way, thanks to Instagram and social media. And it's just destroying your self-worth. Like, you wake up and you're like, oh, I got to get a bigger butt. I got to get stronger arms. It's okay to want to be stronger. But I think there is a problem when you want to look a certain way, especially with the ass. I don't get it. It's hard to find jeans with a big ass, don't you think?
Especially in Asia. I spent some time in all over Thailand, Cambodia, in Kuala Lumpur as well. And it was hard to do some shopping for an American body.
Yeah, everything's tiny, right? Who wears this?
So these tiny. I was at a street market in Thailand and I found a pair of jeans-ish I was thinking of getting. And I looked at the man, I said, do you have any? And he looked at me, he went, too large. I was like, oh my gosh. Okay.
So can you see the pressure Asians, especially women, are put up against? That even after you give birth, you're supposed to be skinny back. You're supposed to be like back to your weight when before you were married, kind of thing. And it's just unrealistic. I have women who are in their 50s and they were asking me like, oh, how do I become 45 kgs again? And I'm just thinking, you're 50. Like, what you are right now, it's completely normal. The fact that you have to be a certain weight to comply with the social status, it's really sad.
Oh, and it's all over. It's like hard to escape that pressure because it's, and you see it on your phone when you pick it up, which is, let's be honest, it's glued to our bodies. Our phone is always on, it's always sending us advertisements. And you turn on the radio, there's ads. You turn on the TV, there's ads. You drive down the street, there's, especially in Kuala Lumpur, like there's tons of ads everywhere.
You can see it. Yeah, it's hard to ignore. It's in your face 24/7. You, whether you like it or not, it will somehow affect you.
Yeah, definitely. So, it will. It's subliminal. Yeah. It's these messages that are just suffocating from all angles. Can't escape it. But I think if we really took a step and we really thought about it, stepped back, we don't all want to look the same. If we all looked identical, like little androids or identical copies and clones, we don't want that. I think we could take a step back, think, okay, no, I do want to see a different types of people, like, are different type. Of course, that feels right, but it's marketing. It's just, I want, if you don't
people just want to sell stuff. Yeah, they just sell want stuff. You want to sell stuff, and they constantly want you to feel miserable, so you buy more stuff.
Bingo, marketing 101. If the people are miserable and fearful and scared, then I'll make my money.
That's the thing. Like even when I join some yoga studios, like, even if I'm teaching different, I can tell, like, one yoga studio, you only see skinny girls. You just see the same physique, just skinny Lululemon girls. And then another studio is like all types of bodies. And I love that. I love it because I'm like, yes. When I see someone super scared coming into class and I'm like, is this your first time? And she goes, yeah. And I'm really scared. And I'm like, listen, it's a safe space. You don't have to be perfect. You don't have to look like everyone. You're perfect just the way you are. Just do your thing and I'm here for you. So that really makes everything change when you go into a yoga studio. You need to be comforting in that sense that it's okay. You don't have to be skinny. You don't have to be flexible. You can do it. You can feel the effects. You will get the benefits if you just try. That's it.
Yes, you absolutely will. And I completely agree that it's amazing when people come into the studio too that are of all different ages, shapes, sizes. I feel so lucky where I'm teaching now that I get to teach to such a diverse range of people. I have a lot of, at one studio, a lot of retired people, and usually they have a hip replacement or they have a shoulder surgery scheduled for 2 weeks because their fascia is like disintegrating. It's just amazing. I'm like, I'm so lucky I get to. They walk into class and someone says, I cannot put any pressure on my knees, no cat cows. So then I have to say, okay, how can we do cat cow cross-legged, or how can we get that shape standing? Or someone will come and say, I have bursitis in my hip joint. And I think, okay, how can I do? I feel very grateful. And then at another studio, I have some great guys who come in who are probably in their 40s and are,
I love that.
Love how they are trying.
And if you notice, they're more, they listen to you. They actually are more disciplined. They practice at home. And I love that fact that, oh, I did my breathing practice for the whole week. And I'm like, wow. And she's 60. And I'm like, that's great. You hardly hear things like that from a 20-year-old, a 30-year-old. They're like, oh, yeah, breathing practice. Oh, yeah, I didn't have time. I'm like, okay, let's move on.
Yeah. I also would love to talk to you, Alia, about what yoga in Malaysia is like. Is it only in Kuala Lumpur, or is it all over Malaysia? Has it been really popular recently or more popular in the past? Just kind of love to get your perspective on yoga in Malaysia.
All right. So in Malaysia, we are a multicultural country. So we have the Malays, the Malaysian Chinese, and the Malaysian Indians. A lot of times, yoga was a thing in Malaysia, but then it had a little bit of controversy in about 2008 when the National Fatwa Council, which is the Islamic Council, ruled that yoga was forbidden against Islamic teaching, and they believe that people could deviate from Islamic faith if they perform yoga, which has its roots in Hinduism. So it was banned. And then our prime minister back at that time, Abdullah Badawi, stated that it's not banned, it's just a physical regime with no elements of worship, shall continue. So there was a bit of controversy in 2008, but then slowly in 2016, a lot of gyms were popping up left, right, and center. So the cost of working out in Malaysia has decreased, and a lot of more people could afford gym memberships. And that's when you see there were a lot more people joining yoga classes. Yoga is practiced like everywhere in Malaysia. Every state has pretty much at least one yoga studio. In Kuala Lumpur, there's too many to mention. Obviously, being a capital, I see yoga as something that is still slowly building. We get a lot of Malays, the locals, are starting to join and be comfortable with the fact that it's not a religious practice. It is more a physical practice and also a breathing practice. It is hard to explain, especially like I'm Malay myself. So my aunties are always concerned about, oh, have I converted into Hinduism? But I stopped explaining myself. Instead, I just lived my life and continue practicing, continue teaching. And I have seen a lot of Malay people starting to practice yoga. And that makes me proud because I'm glad they put aside that whole religion bit away and focus on the benefits instead of, oh, this is from Hinduism and this is against my religion. With the Malays, it's a special case. But for the rest of the other races, I've seen them doing yoga like since before I started. So that's the situation in Malaysia.
Oh, I hadn't realized it had been banned in 2008. That's very serious.
Yeah. When that came out, I was just really shocked. It was such a big buzz in Malaysia when that happened. But then I'm glad our prime minister was pretty cool back then. And he was like, no, like you can practice yoga as long as you don't deviate from your religion.
So is there anything, like you're not allowed to use the Sanskrit names of yoga poses, like calling it Shavasana or
Oms? No, it's not recommended to practice mantras.
Okay.
Chanting and all that stuff.
Got it. Okay. But it's good to hear that pranayama, meditation,
yeah,
all that is
that's
still
fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you ever have any yoga students who freak out about what's going on?
Yes. Oh my God. Yes. There was one time when I was teaching a yoga class, there was this, sometimes I put on some background music And there was the last Shavasana song, which was Ya Devi. And it was, of course, it was in Hindi. And it was a beautiful song, at least for me. But maybe I was insensitive in that sense, that maybe some people would find it uncomfortable. So there was a couple that was telling me that, like, maybe you shouldn't put on that music with all this shanti and stuff like that. And I'm just like, oh, I'm really sorry if that triggered you. I said, to me, I just take it as the most beautiful vibration for the last part of our class. So those things do trigger people, and I have to be very careful about what kind of music I put on, which is sad, but we just gotta make sure that no one gets triggered.
Oh, yeah, that's so important, to make sure everyone feels comfortable and also respected, and that no one's forcing anything on them. I think it's great that you're paying attention to that. And in case somebody also hasn't heard too much about Malaysia, would you like to share with our listeners just more in general about your country?
Sure. I'll give you the boring parts, which is Malaysia is a Southeastern Asian country. Okay. So we share borders with Thailand, Singapore, Vietnam, Brunei, and Indonesia. Kuala Lumpur, where I live, is the national capital. And we have about 32 million people living in Malaysia. Our official language is Malay. And the recognized language is English. So in Malaysia, we live in a multicultural country. So that means that we have 69.7% of Bumiputras, which are the locals. We have the 22.5% of the Chinese, Malaysian Chinese, and the 6.8% Malaysian Indians. So the most famous iconic spot in KL will be the Petronas Twin Towers. It's encased in steel and glass. It took 7 years to build it. It has 88 stories. Between 1998 and 2004, the city, this was the tallest twin towers in the world until other people built other stuff. You can only hold on to a title for a certain amount of time. We have beautiful beaches. We have Langkawi, we have Tioman, we have Perhentian Island, beautiful beaches, clear water. We also have this beautiful town called Malacca, and it's very special because it was colonized by the Portuguese and the Dutch. So you'll see a lot of historic landmarks that are so different and beautiful and completely, it's a mix of culture. One thing about Malacca is it has so many mix of culture. You see a lot of Portuguese side, Dutch, Chinese. So it's a beautiful mix of cultures in one space. We also have Borneo, which is Sabah and Sarawak. And in Sabah, there is a spot called Kinabatangan, and there's so many endangered monkey species that a lot of them are already extinct, but then they are still living in Sabah. We also have Cameron Highlands, which is up in the hills. They have beautiful gardens, and also the tea, where they grow tea leaves. It's a sight to see. I think everyone should go and visit just to see how beautiful the mountains are. And I have to talk about Batu Caves. So Batu Caves is a limestone hill. It is a Hindu shrine. It's probably the most popular Hindu shrine in Kuala Lumpur. So it is also the tallest statue of Hindu deity in Malaysia. It's in gold, like you can't miss it. It's completely all in gold, and it's beautiful. And the steps up to the shrine is colorful. I gotta talk about our food. Like, we have so much food. I don't know if everyone likes our food, but I can tell you that our food is very flavorful. We have our nasi lemak, we have our roti canai, we have too much of food here, to be honest. If you go on Instagram and you type Malaysian, you'll see like food pictures.
Oh gosh, also, I eat so well in Malaysia. Your roti canai, all that bread is so good.
Yeah.
The Batu Caves are incredible. If you go to Malaysia, you have to see them.
Batu Caves is beautiful. I think just the vibe, just going there, it just feels very light and it's just very joyful. Malaysia also, I have to talk about the people. I think Malaysians are extremely polite. We're nice. Maybe not so nice to each other, but definitely nice to tourists sometimes. But yeah, I like the fact that we're multicultural, because even though I'm Malay, I still eat Chinese food and Indian food. I still can go to a friend's Hindu wedding. I can still go to the church. We are so multicultural that we are so accepting of each other's religion and culture. We're very careful about, like, for Muslims, we don't eat pork. And then if you have a Chinese neighbor and they know not to cook, like, pork if they were to send anything to you, and they're very respectful of each other. We also have our crazy celebrations. Do you remember, Lily, how many holidays we have in Malaysia?
Oh, you got to tell me the number.
We have too much holidays. I don't know specifically how many, but we just have too much holidays. Because we're multicultural, we celebrate everyone's holiday. So that is like Hari Raya, Chinese New Year, Deepavali. So in a way, we all look forward to it because there's different food being served. See, it's always back to food. Mm. Everyone's looking forward to the food. And I think Malaysia is great. If you want to have a chilled out holiday, you go to Borneo. And if you want like a more like hardcore party scene, then you got to be in KL.
Wonderful. So thank you so much, Alia, for sharing so much about Malaysia. And I'm sure you made everybody drool a little. Everyone's a little hungrier now. Look, time to get a snack. But a question I ask to every guest on the show, and I would love to ask it to you, is what is your personal definition of yoga?
All right. So yoga to me is the most practical practice. If executed with mindfulness and awareness, it will definitely benefit the body, mind, and the soul.
Perfect. And said, very eloquent, very succinct. It's like you had maybe listened to an episode before and maybe had in mind that might come up.
I got my papers. I have anxiety, so it's good to be prepared.
Oh, definitely. No, I feel that. So if anyone wants to reach out or learn a little bit more about you, I will put your Instagram here in the show notes. So if anyone's listening to the podcast, you can just scroll down, check that out, or it will be on my website as well, wildyogatribe.com/yoga in Malaysia. So is there anything else, Alia, you'd like to share, whether someone can get in touch with you a certain way or anything else?
You can get in touch with me on my Instagram. Just send me a DM if you have any questions. Also, pop by and say hi on Instagram. Thank you, Lily.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Alia. It has been just such a joy, just enormous joy for me to get to have this conversation with you today. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you, Lily. Thank you for your time, Lily. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of the Wild Yoga Tribe podcast. My conversation with Alia Lika, a yoga teacher from Malaysia, was so beautiful as we danced around so many topics around yoga, about how yoga isn't a handstand, and you really should never skip Shavasana. I hope this conversation made you smile, made you laugh, and made you rethink what yoga can be for you. So if you're looking to tune into a podcast episode that's all about being a yoga teacher while still being a yoga student on the path of yoga, then this is the conversation for you. Thank you for listening to the Wild Yoga Tribe podcast. Be well. Thank you for the gift of your attention today. If you feel called, please share this episode with someone who you think could benefit from it. Leaving a review would also be so appreciated. I also hope you can join me online on my website, wildyogatribe.com, or on social media. I would love to get to know you better. I would love to share with you and to hear your thoughts. Send me a DM, send me a note, get in touch. It would be great to hear from you. And as always, be well, dear one, be well.